thanks to everyone for coming out this Thanksgiving weekend. You can see the subject matter of our talk today. Before I start, I'd like to tell a little joke appropriate to the occasion. It's the day before Thanksgiving, and an elderly man from Phoenix called up his son in New York. And he said, "Son, after 45 years of marriage, 45 years of misery, I've had enough. I'm bailing out. Your mother and I are getting a divorce. Call your sister in Chicago and tell her." So the son immediately calls his sister in Chicago. She's really, really smoking. She's fuming. She says, "Like heck they are. Over my dead body, they're getting divorced." She tells her brother, "Buy our tickets. We'll be in Phoenix tomorrow morning. We'll see about this." Then she calls her father. She says, "Dad, don't do anything until I get there. My brother and I will be there tomorrow morning. Promise me you won't do anything until we get there." He said, "I promise." So the old man hung up the phone, turned to his wife, and said, "Okay, honey, kids are coming for Thanksgiving, and they're paying their own fares." So our talk today is give thanks in everything, not for everything, but give thanks in everything. And the reason we entitled that will become clear as we go on. This is also something a little funny, although as you read this, it's not particularly funny. A mother got a letter from her daughter. "Dear Mom, sorry I haven't written sooner. I broke my arm and my left leg when I jumped from the second floor of my dormitory when we had the fire. We were lucky. A young service station attendant saw the blaze and called the fire department. They were there in minutes. I was in the hospital for a few days. Paul, the service station attendant, came to see me every day. And because it was taking so long to get our dormitory livable again, I moved in with him. He's been so nice. I must admit that I'm pregnant. Paul and I plan to get married just as soon as he can get a divorce. I hope things are fine at home. I'm doing fine and will write more when I get the chance." Okay, can you imagine what the mother's thinking right now? Right? Like, total freak out. But then there's a P.S. It says, "Dear Mom, none of the above is true, but I did get a C in sociology and flunk chemistry. I just wanted you to receive the news in the right perspective." How often is our joy stolen because we're concentrating on what we don't have and we're not appreciating the millions and millions and millions and millions of times when God's goodness has showed up in our life and all the things that we do have? So when the mother got things in perspective and started thinking about all the things that she did have and all the blessings that she had compared to what portended this letter, obviously she became overwhelmed with a sense of gratitude. So perspective is a big part in going through life with a sense of thanksgiving and gratitude. Cicero, the great Roman lawyer, orator, and senator, he said that gratitude is not only the greatest of virtues, but it is the parent of all others. And there are three things that erode our sense of gratitude and thanksgiving. Their pride, their complaining, and their carelessness. I'll give you an example of carelessness. In 1926, the hugest earthquake in its entire history hit Japan. 45,000 square miles were affected. 5 major cities were basically leveled. 300,000 people lost their lives, and 2.5 million people were homeless. There was no medicine, there was no food, there was no shelter. It was in the middle of winter. The whole country was on the edge of total despair. In America, the United States Red Cross, and this is 1926, they raised $10 million, and they brought shelter, they brought food, they brought medical supplies, they brought clothing, and literally they brought Japan back from the brink of disaster. And the Japanese people were so grateful at that time that the Emperor of Japan made a proclamation. And he said, "The Japanese people will never, ever, ever forget the kindness of the Americans." 1926. 18 years later, Pearl Harbor. Right? So what does this tell us in our own small, micro way? That boy or girl of your dreams that you met 5 or 10 years ago, don't let that be stale with the passage of time. It was a miracle then. It's just as much a miracle now as it was then. Just because 5 years have gone under the bridge or 10 years have gone under the bridge, don't start taking it for granted. Keep it fresh. That promotion we got 2 years ago, keep it fresh. Keep remembering how happy you were, how that was a blessing from God. Don't start taking for granted. Your first child, when you had your first child, you got down on your knees and you said, God, thank you, thank you, thank you. What a blessing. Now as a teenager and you're saying, God, why did you do this to me? But just because of the passage of time, miracles have not undone themselves. They have not become anything other than they were. So learn the art of keeping things fresh and be open to all the many, many ways and shapes and forms that God enters into our life and blesses us with goodness. Don't get careless along the way. This is an illustration about complaining. In New York, an advertising company, they wanted to do an experiment. And they sent one of their young executives down on the street with several days worth of beard, an old stinky coat, sunglasses, a tin can, and a sign that said, I am blind. So that day, he collected $4. The next day, same guy went out, same coat, same sunglasses, same tin can, but this time, the sign said, it's spring and I'm blind. And that day, he collected $40, because he reminded passersby in the street of what they had to be thankful for, that with their eyes they could see the beauty and the flowers and the mountains and the sunset of spring. So don't go through life complaining. We've got far more to be thankful for than we have to complain about. The founders of this country, who declared that the last Thursday of November would be a day of thanksgiving, their faith was not based on possessions, which could be lost. Our forefathers were not so much thankful for things as they were thankful in something. They were thankful in bounty, but they were also thankful in scarcity. They were thankful in joy, but they were also thankful in misery. They were thankful for feasts, but they were also thankful in famine. Because their thankfulness was not based on things. Things will be taken away in due course of time. Their thankfulness was based on something which is permanent and which will never be taken away, which is that God is the indwelling spirit within our heart. That is immutable. Everything else, including this entire universe, will wax and wane, but God's love for us will never waver, will never budge. You will never do anything that will make God stop wanting to do good to you. You may think, I've made mistakes, I've messed up, God could never still want to do good to me. But there's nothing you could do, nothing so bad, so heinous, so abominable, there's nothing you could do that would ever make God stop wanting to do good to you. And that's a constant. You can take that to the bank. And that alone should make us swell up with thanksgiving every minute of every day. And then pride. You know, every country, because they aspire to be very, very strong and powerful, they have some big animal in nature. The British had the lion. And once it was said, the sun never set on the British Empire. In America, we have the eagle. Now, that British lion on which the sun never set is no longer a lion in terms of international affairs. It's important to remember that we didn't get where we got by ourselves. Alex Haley, who was the creator of Roots, the longest-running television series in history, won any number of Academy Awards. He had in his office a picture of a tortoise on top of a post. Now, there's no way a tortoise can get on top of a post. He had to have help. So Alex Haley said, whenever I start to get a little bit swell-headed and puffed up, I wrote what I thought was a particularly good screenplay, or I got nominated for yet another Academy Award, I just look at this picture and remember that I didn't get there by myself. I got there because of the talents and abilities that God embedded within me. And so we should always remember that God is playing a major role in the good things in our life. There was a story illustrating this of a sage. He was deep in meditation and he felt a little nibbling on his cloth. He looked down, there was a tiny little mouse there. So he said to the mouse, he said, what do you want? And the mouse said, cats. Cats are always trying to chase me. So with his mystic power, he said to the mouse, all right, become a cat. Became a cat. A couple weeks later, he feels some pawing. He looks down, it's the cat. What do you want now? Dogs. Dogs are chasing me. All right, then become a dog. So he goes away. A couple weeks later, he feels some pawing. Looks down, it's the dog. Now what? Tigers. Tigers want to eat me. So he said, become a tiger. Then as soon as he became a tiger, he was looking at the sage. Like, His whiskers were twitching. He was licking his lips like that. His yellow eyes were... So the sage said, "You want to eat me?" And the tiger said, "Yes." So then the sage says, "Punar Mushika Bhava." Then again become a mouse. So don't forget that we didn't get to where we are by ourselves. And if we do forget that, if we think it's by our own talents and our own abilities and our own hard work, then Punar Bhushika Bhava, then again become a mouse. Go back to where you were before you started. It's proven that successful businesses, successful families, now every head of a family knows, every business CEO knows, that you have to point out what the people are doing wrong. You have to correct it and set them on the right direction. You can't run a family, you can't run a business without pointing out faults. But in families and businesses where appreciation is expressed four times more than criticism, those families and those businesses are successful. It's not that you just tippy-toe around and you're not willing to confront people and criticize them and correct them, but if you lavish four times more appreciation on them, that will make a successful family and a successful business. Aren't we so quick? It's almost like a finger snap to jump on or to point out something that someone's doing wrong. Imagine if we were just as quick and just as enthusiastic and just as glib pointing out all the things they did right. How much more encouraged they would be. God does this. God will overlook 99 faults. He'll overlook 999 faults and he'll give you the benefit of the doubt. He's not a nitpicker. He's not a fault finder. He's not judgmental. He has our best interests at heart. What if God met our needs to the same extent that we gave him our lives? What kind of a mess would be in there? What if we never saw another flower bloom because we grumbled when God sent the rain? What if God stopped loving and caring for us because we stopped loving and caring for others? What if God took away his messengers because we didn't listen to his messenger? What if he wouldn't bless us today because we didn't thank him yesterday? What if God answered our prayers the way we answer his call for service? What if God decided to stop leading us tomorrow because we did not follow him today? God has done millions and millions and millions of times more for us than we could ever, ever do for him. He doesn't need our gratitude, but we need to give it to him. When we tender our gratitude to God for this day, for breath of life within our lungs, for people that we love and people that love us, it vaccinates us, it inoculates us against taking things for granted. Nothing will steal your joy and dry up your sense of thankfulness and gratitude quicker than taking things for granted. Benjamin Franklin had this to say, "All happy people are grateful, and ungrateful people cannot be happy." We tend to think that it's being unhappy that leads people to complain, but it's truer to say that it is complaining that leads people to becoming unhappy. Become grateful and you will become a much happier person. So our title is not to be grateful for everything, thankful for everything, but be thankful in everything. We can't be thankful that we get cancer. We can't be thankful that someone we love got into a horrific auto accident. But we can be thankful in as much as God can take harm and use it for good, as long as we stay in the right attitude and the right consciousness. You think you have it hard? Let me tell you the story of Fanny Crosby. When she was 6 weeks old, she got a little pink eye. We all had it when we were kids. Nothing out of the ordinary. But when her parents took her to the doctor, he gave her the wrong ointment and caused her to be permanently blind. She went on to write 8,000 hymns and prayers praising God. She's the most published composer of hymns in history. She even had to use pseudonyms because she was so prolific. She got into old age, and someone asked her, "Fanny, if you had to meet today that doctor who caused you to be blind, what would you say to him?" She said, "I would thank him with all my heart. I would thank him for all my heart. Because my life has been such an adventure. My dreams have been fulfilled beyond my furthest imagination. I'm right where I should be. And I cannot say that with certitude that if I'd kept my sight, that I would be where I am now." So insofar as he was instrumental, I don't I'm not thankful for the blindness, but I'm thankful in the blindness, because in His infinite wisdom, God knew that everything would work out as long as we trust in Him under all circumstances. Rudyard Kipling was one of the wealthiest authors during his lifetime. In his era, hardly anybody got wealthy by writing. But he was one of the very, very few people that became rich in his own lifetime. And some news reporter who wanted to make a name for himself did the numbers. He actually added up all the words that Rudyard Kipling had published, and then he compared that to his income at that point in time. And he figured out that Rudyard Kipling had made approximately $100 for every word that he wrote and published. So he was kind of a smart aleck, and he was interviewing Rudyard Kipling. And he pulled out a $100 bill from his pocket. And he said, "Would you give me one of your $100 words right now?" And Rudyard Kipling's arm just snaked out, just faster than the eye could see. Grabbed that $100 bill, put it in his pocket, and said, "Thanks." I would say that thanks is not just a $100 word, it's a $1 million word. When we opened this building in 2001, 11 years ago, an impossible task. How do you build a world-class Hare Krishna temple in an area that's 90% Mormon? How do you do that? I mean, statistics, research, analysis, projections, no way, Jose, you're out of your mind. And yet, it opened, it's gorgeous. To this day, it's the only Rajasthani-style building in all of the United States of America. And 5,000 people turned out for the opening ceremonies, which went from like 10 in the morning till 8 at night. And every single one of them came up to by Bobby and I, said, "Congratulations." So they were lined up. So I just said one word 5,000 times. Thank you, thank you, thank you. That's all I said. That's all I had time. Thank you, thank you. I wasn't thanking them because they were congratulating us. I was thanking them because the answer to the question, how do you build a world-class Hare Krishna temple in an area that's 90% Mormon? The only way you do it is through all the people that wish you well and want it to happen. So there were people there that had donated money, there were people there that had come and done service, and there were people there that hadn't done either, but there was this mood. They wanted it to happen. We had the blessings throughout the whole fundraising process, the whole construction process, the whole impossible endeavor. Everybody wanted to see this pulled off. Everybody considered themselves a part of it. And they wanted to be able to pat themselves on the back and say, not they did it, but we did. And so when I said thanks 5,000 times, I would say, thanks if you came and you did some service. Thanks if you gave a donation. But thanks if you just put it out there, the vibration, the blessings that we had your blessing. You all created this temple. It wasn't us. We didn't create it on our own. But collectively, we all created this temple with the grace of God. This is a word, if you spend much time around Hare Krishnas, you'll hear them say this word over and over again. You say, what does that mean? I know they say Hare Krishna a lot, but what's this word? Hari Bol, what does that mean? This is what we're about. Hari is a name for God, and Bol means shout or say the names of God. I read about this missionary who went to Papua New Guinea. He came to an area where, due to some sort of environmental factor, no one knew what it was. But generation after generation, about the age of 28 to 30, all the men would go blind. And this had been happening for hundreds of years. It was just assumed that after reaching the age of 28 to 30, you'd go blind. Everyone took that as their fate. And they fully expected that. Now this missionary, he had had some medical training. And he put together an ointment or a potion, and he started treating the young men in their mid-20s. So they got to be 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, 34, and the blindness that had overtaken their fathers and their grandfathers, some or other, they had sidestepped that. So a whole generation escaped the fate which was expected of their fathers and their grandfathers and their fathers and their grandfathers. So they got this missionary before the tribal council and they said, "We don't have a word in our language for thank you. So what we're going to do to show our gratitude is that wherever we go, whoever we meet, we're going to tell your name. We're going to spread your name. wherever we go and whoever we meet. When we chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare, we're acknowledging that God has done millions of times more for us than we could ever do for Him. That we can never come to the end of things to be grateful for. And the best that we can do is spread His name far and wide. Now you may say, well, is Krishna a name for God? Or I don't accept Krishna as a name for God. That's fine. That's fine. Here's a picture of Prabhupada, the founder of Hare Krishna movement, with his disciples out chanting in a public place. Today there are chanters on Oxford Street in London, Times Square in New York, Westwood Village in Los Angeles. One time when I was living in Los Angeles Temple in the 80s, we went to our normal place on Saturday night in front of a bank and we chanted. And sometimes between chants, I would go out and address the crowd. So one Christian fellow came up to me one Saturday night. He was in his 20s. He worked out in the gym. He had muscles coming out of his earlobes. And he was shaking with anger. He got about this close to me. It looked like he wanted to punch my lights out. And he said, Krishna is not God. And I said, I don't actually have a problem with that. He said, you don't? No, but walk with me here. Krishna is a name for God. It's a Sanskrit name for God, which means all wealth, all strength, all fame, all beauty, all knowledge, and all humility. So Krishna means, I can't compete with that. I can't. There's two conversations going on at the same time. Krishna is a Sanskrit name for God that means all-knowing. So is God all-knowing? Of course God's all-knowing. Krishna is a Sanskrit name for God which means all-powerful. Is the God that you worship all-powerful? He said, of course the God that I worship is all-powerful. Then the God that you worship is... Then Krishna is a good name to describe the God you worship, right? Is the God that you worship all-wealthy, created all the universes with all the jewels and all the wealth? He said, yes. God is all wealthy. God is famous. Everybody knows about God. Even the atheist. God doesn't exist. There is no God. I don't believe in God. He just mentioned God three times. So I went through all the six opulences, and he agreed that while Krishna is not God, God is Krishna. All wealth, all strength, all beauty, all fame, all knowledge. So we shook hands, we gave each other a manly hug, and we went our separate ways. So Krishna is a name for God, which means all attractive. And there are many names for God. Some of them refer to His wealth, some to His beauty, some to His fame, some to His knowledge. But at the end of the day, He's all attractive, isn't He? So that nomenclature includes and encompasses the connotations of any other name of God. And that's why it is greatly preferred by great saints and sages. So we, in chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, show our gratitude for the many things for which we're beholding to God. And this principle of glorifying the name of God is not limited to our scriptures. In the Psalms of David, and Psalms basically means what I'm talking about, glorifying the name of God. This is one of many verses. Oh, give thanks unto the Lord. Call upon His name. Make known His deeds among the people. Sing unto Him. Sing songs unto Him. Talk ye all of His wondrous works. Glory ye in His holy name. Let the heart of them rejoice that seek the Lord. Seek the Lord in His strength. Seek His face forevermore. And in this part of the Bible, it talks about how after wandering through the deserts, the Israelites finally came and they conquered the area which was to be known as Jerusalem. They occupied the place where the temple was to be built in the future. And they had the ark. They had the ark of the covenant, their most sacred object, which they carried around the desert for 40 years on a palanquin. And it's explained that David, at all times, he had no less than 300 people retained to sing the names of the Lord with drums and cymbals and lute and lyre. So whether it was 3 o'clock in the afternoon or whether it was 3 a.m., there were no less than 300 people constantly expressing their gratitude to God by singing His holy names. And it's explained that in the evening, as the sun was setting and darkness was coming on, God would come in amongst all those chanters and participants as a cloud. And they would feel His presence in amongst them. And they would feel how pleased He was that they were showing their gratitude to Him by chanting His holy names. We do the Festival of Colors every year, and there's a cloud of sorts that goes up. People have bags of red and green and yellow and blue, and we do a countdown every 2 hours, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, and then they throw the colors up in the air. But there's more to the Festival of Colors than colors. There's music, there's live bands. I was meeting last week with Wally Pershman. Wally is a great guy. He's the number two guy in the Utah County Sheriff's Office. And he wanted to meet with me to talk about the traffic and the congestion and the parking for next year's Festival of Colors. And Wally's a nice guy. I mean, he kind of breaks the mold of what you'd expect for a typical law enforcement officer. He's not at all uptight or judgmental or negative. But I don't think he's ever actually been on site during the festival. So he asked me, he said, "True, those bands you have, do they play good, wholesome, uplifting lyrics?" I said, "No, Wally, they don't. They don't. It goes far beyond that. That doesn't even begin to describe what's happening. They play the names of God. Govinda, Gopala, Krishna, Radhe, Radhe. From 10 o'clock in the morning, actually 9 o'clock in the morning. Festival starts at 10, but by 9 o'clock we start the music because there's like 3,000 people here waiting to get in. From 9 o'clock in the morning to 8 o'clock at night, all you hear resonating anywhere on the property are the names of God. And it doesn't matter to us whether people understand that or not. The benefit is absolute. The purification is absolute. And so when tens of thousands of people are completely enlivened and surcharged by having exposed themselves to the pure chanting of the names of God, and that cloud goes up, my salary, my reward, my pay for working literally year-round to put these festivals together is I imagine that that cloud in and around amongst the people is God coming to show His gratitude in the same way that He came amongst the Israelites as a cloud too. And you'll see me with a smile from ear to ear, completely ecstatic, completely fulfilled. Prabhupada said these words, "In the ordinary way, if someone gives me a glass of water when I'm thirsty, it is etiquette I say thank you. And God has given us so vast mass of water in the ocean, in the sky, and in the sea. Without water we cannot live. He has also given us such an abundance of light, the sun, moon, and stars. Yet there is no thanksgiving. Rather we say God is dead. God expects for all that He gives us, what does He want in return? What does He want in return? Nothing except that we appreciate. If we express simple appreciation, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, God is pleased." Prabhupada goes on, "A truly devoted and spiritually mature person does not thank the Lord only one day a year. He or she give their prayer of thanks every day and every waking moment, showing gratitude to the Lord by offering Him loving service eternally." So friends, let's guard against pride and complacency. Let's keep things in perspective. Let's not focus on what we don't have, but be open and full of wonder for all that we do have and all that God sends our way. Let's remember that we got where we got to, not on our own, but with His help, lest we again become a mouse. In the very last chapter, in one of the last verses of the Bhagavad Gita, the Song of God, Krishna says to Arjuna, and through Arjuna to all of us, "All that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, as well as all austerities that you may perform, should be done as an offering to me." If we'll learn to get up every day with thanksgiving in our hearts, counting on God to deal with us more graciously than we deal with Him. If we'll remember that He does millions and millions and millions of times more for us than we could ever do for Him, then we will come in to the prosperity, the love, the peace, the joy, the purposefulness, and the fulfillment that He has in mind for us. And if you'd like to join me in chanting, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.